Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda, and you know what? I think I totally, Margaret, missed our anniversary of our show. I just realized it's... Oops.
Oh, we both did. Oh, my gosh. Well,
ooh,
well, go ahead.
Oh, well.
How many years has it been?
Okay, this is really sad because I'm not even sure, but I'm pretty sure we are in our... We just finished our seventh year. I gotta look. I'll look
it up.
That's
about right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You think I
well,
would know?
It's,
after doing
I don't know,
the
but
show,
I feel like pioneers.
50 weeks
every...
a year. Think about that. 50 weeks a year for 7 years. Oh my goodness!
I think
gracious.
About that all the time. So, well, happy anniversary. Good job.
Thank you. So, how
Good
are you,
job.
Margaret?
I'm great. I know that you were posting pictures of a fireplace today. I saw your Instagram stories,
mm-hmm.
and you were cold, and I was looking out
mm-hmm.
the window thinking, my, how the tables have turned. 85 degrees and sunny in Boston, so things,
I'm
are,
so
things
happy
are looking
for you.
Up. I know.
You
we
so
it.
Deserve
we
that.
Needed it.
And we
yes.
had this gloomy, drizzly, crummy weather. And then I had my air conditioning guy out here today trying to fix our air conditioning. And so he had it on full blast in our entire house, and it was so cold. So that's why I had a fireplace
yeah.
going.
Have you ever had it so hot that your oil paints just drip out of the tube? You know, like when it
in my studio, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
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 But
we
you're
get...
air conditioned in your studio now, right?
I am, but if I haven't been out there in a couple of days and it's been in the hundreds or the high 90s
right.
and I go out there and it's like, whoa, but those days are a while away. So.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
I was
well, good.
Yeah, it's all good. So anyway, no, things are great. Things are super busy. I am doing this one-room challenge remodel of my son's room, and it's not due till a week from tomorrow, but my son's coming home a week from yesterday, and of course I have to finish it and take photos, God forbid, before he moves in, because it's never going to look the same.
send him to his brothers. Tell him to go for a visit.
Are you kidding?
Oh,
he's been gone for 8 months.
Though.
I can't. I'm going to not let him go anywhere for the first week.
Is this a challenge competition that you could actually like win, or is it just for fun?
No, it's complete fun. Complete fun.
Oh, good.
But it's
well,
so great
because
you post on their blog, sound familiar, like the 30 and 30, and it's just a great
yep.
way to keep you in kind of on track, if that makes sense.
That's
so
great.
I have two paintings.
That's
I have
terrific.
To paint.
Oh,
yeah.
Hmm. Get going.
I know.
Get going before
I will.
It gets too hot.
So
I love
I'm
it.
Wondering how many people read the title to the show today, How to Sell Your Art on Instagram from an Artist Who Knows, and thought I was going to talk myself. And I'm so happy to say it's not me.
That is pretty great. I hadn't even thought about it. You're right. Nope.
Well, if you think about it.
We have found a star.
We have. And Julia Powell is on the line. So, Julia, first I'm going to welcome you.
Great.
Are you there? Oh, yeah. There you are.
There she is.
And let me give you guys a little bit of information about Julia so you know. Julia lives and works in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So, Margaret, do you guys see each other like at the grocery store or no?
Well, turns out we are both members of the Cambridge Art Association. So there you go.
Of course.
Her reputation preceded her.
And Julia holds degrees from Stanford and Yale, so sadly she's not well educated. Kidding.
Yeah, there you go.
She's recently been profiled in Boston Magazine with her paintings also featured in Marie Claire Magazine and Architectural Digest. Oh my gosh. She was chosen as the VIP print artist for the Museum of Fine Arts, MFA, Boston 2017 Summer Gala. She's had many successes at the MFA events in recent years as well. Her artwork was also featured on the television show The Mindy Project, which was formerly on Fox and Hulu. And her paintings can also be found in many private collections across the U.S., Canada, Europe, South America, and Asia. She has a relationship with Abigail Ogilvy Gallery in Boston and Star Gallery in the Northeast Harbor, Maine. And she has a phenomenal Instagram following. And I'll brag on your behalf, Julia. You have 58,000 followers. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That is so impressive.
How long have you been on Instagram?
I started, I think, roughly December of 2015, so about a little under 2.5 years. Although
great.
I've sort of taken it seriously, I would say, for about a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so let's start a little bit with your background. And I would love to know kind of how you got started, if you always loved to create and make art, and how you got where you did.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you both for having me on. This is really fun. I always watercolored. Even as sort of a kid, maybe around 6 or 7, I started asking for paints. And no one in my family is artistically inclined, at least visually. There's some great writers, but so it was kind of a little random, but my parents encouraged it. And so I always was kind of like doodling or sketching or watercoloring when I was growing up, but it just didn't seem like a viable path.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a strong student and very into sports, and so those kind of ended up, I think, sucking up a lot of my time. And then by the time I was in law school, I was still watercoloring, and some friends of mine were like, oh, these are great. Would you mind doing the invitations to X, Y, or Z of a party they were having or this or that? And then I started doing some wedding invitations, maybe about, 15, including my brother. and so I was kind of doing that, but again, it just didn't – I would never have thought about being a professional artist because – I don't have independent sources of income, and so I just didn't think I could make it work financially.
Sure.
And then 4 years ago, I have two older brothers, and one of them gave me an easel and oil paints and canvases for Christmas. And he said, I think you're really talented, and I think you should just try oil painting. I did, and the first year I loved it, and I got very into it, but I was horrible, although he did not think so. He was very encouraging, as was my other brother. And I just was on YouTube just kind of trying to figure it out because I'd never been taught formally as a watercolorist, and so I just didn't have a lot of background aside from just trying to work hard and figure out the medium. So that's how it started.
So cool.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
I
love that it was your brother, you know, it's sort of like, it says a lot about kind of your relationship that he would even have noticed, you know, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to ask about your early influencers, and I'm kind of curious because so many artists we talk to will say that they had an art teacher or, you know, someone who told them that they were good at what they were doing or trying to do, or maybe it was just someone whose work you saw, but was there anyone in your, you know, sort of before law school, in your educational path that kind of saw this beside your brother?
No. I mean, it was both brothers and my parents very encouraging. I would say my close friends were always like, oh, wow, you're super talented. And all of them, from my brothers to close friends of mine, purchased my work in that first year that I was kind of experimenting, which gave me a lot of confidence. But, you know, I've had amazing teachers my entire life, but I would say mostly it would be about writing, and I write a lot, and I am still trying to get some things published. So I think that's sort of how I often express my creativity in an academic setting. But there wasn't, you know, I had a great photography teacher in high school, but really I've never had a painting teacher or instructor, so no one ever told me that I could succeed in it, honestly.
Yeah.
That said, I had, you know, incredibly supportive family members who basically said you can do whatever you want because you're awesome. So that's obviously an incredible gift. Yeah.
That really
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So I'm curious because I know you went to Yale and then you went to Stanford Law School and then on the professional practice as a lawyer. I mean, did you ever imagine someday you would be an artist and not a lawyer?
Really, when did that egg crack?
And how did that happen?
It's so funny because I just went to my law school reunion, which was hilarious, of course, because for many people have known that I've been painting and actually some people have purchased work, but most people that I didn't keep in touch with, it's like, oh, what firm are you working at in New York? And it's like, well, I've taken a bit of a turn. And then they would respond, yeah, me too. I decided to work, you know, as a general counsel for a company. So
Right. Pretty
big switch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, this is a bigger turn.
I really,
up until the last year and a half, maybe 2 years, I didn't even think even then that it would happen. I mean, I loved it, but I thought it would only be a hobby because, again, I just didn't imagine being able to financially support myself, and that was really important to me. So, and my sense of what was kind of a reasonable amount of money to make was sort of based on law, not corporate law, which is crazy, but just sort of a small practice in Cambridge. And so I think I also had, you know, Cambridge is where I grew up and where I live, it's an expensive place to live. And so kind of what you need in order to make a life for yourself is more than if I lived in other places. And so that was always on my mind.
Yeah,
I completely understand that. And, you know, the thing about Cambridge is it's also a great place to live. So, like, why would you want to leave? You know,
exactly.
To make that your goal is an important thing. Very cool.
Right.
So we actually, you know, we talk to folks all the time who will tell us that they've come to art after, you know, having other careers. Sometimes they leave a career in order to do it. Other times, you know, it's this like delayed thing where they wait until they have time. Usually that reads as, you know, an early retirement or something, and then they figure it out. But before we sort of say, you know, how did you do it, I'm kind of curious, like you had to have a lot of confidence in yourself in order to like actually leave the life that you had made as a lawyer. So, like, can you kind of explain how you knew it was time that you could actually make that transition and feel,
So I'll say this, like, I think it's really interesting when people talk about, you know, I always believed in myself because that, I think you have to have that, of course. You always have to believe in yourself. But I also think that there are so many rejections, and you hear the word no all the time as an artist, even if you're doing well. And so for me, it was really helpful, again, to surround myself with people who are so positive that I'm great and talented and I'm going to make it, that the times where I don't believe in myself, they kind of step in and believe in me for me. And, of course, most of the time I have to do it. But I really think surrounding yourself with people who are so supportive is key, because if I didn't have that, I'm not sure in the beginning if I would have continued just pursuing the craft, just being like, okay, gosh, this is not where I want it to be. But if I work at it every single day for 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, will it get better? And it did. It got markedly better. But that was because there were people around me who were like, you can do it. You're great. It wasn't like I was like some incredible person who was like, I can do it on my own always. You know, I definitely had doubts. And I definitely sometimes, you know, feel like, oh, you know, I'm not good enough. All the things that people. So that's just part of it, is just having people around me to kind of bolster me when I need it. But the other part of it is just, I mean, straight up, I knew when I was consistently selling, like that's what it was. It really wasn't, once I was consistently selling and earning a good income from it for, you know, it was 1 year, then 2 years in a row, then 3 years in a row, then 4 years in a row where sales increased, you know, 500% every year. I just felt like, okay, I can do this. Like, even if I don't sell another painting for 2018, I'm fine.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. You are a
Although
lucky woman.
Although if there are people listening to this podcast who want to purchase art, please, by all means, purchase it. But
she's not done for 2018. She can just, you can afford to feed the kitties. I get it.
Julie, do you
come first?
Do you
Go
think
ahead.
Your definition of success is different now than it was when you began your art career?
Oh, my God, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Sadly. I think, you know, success breeds success. And I, if you had told me this is where I would be 4 years ago, I wouldn't believe you, and I would be over the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
now I am just more ambitious, which unfortunately that's sort of just how my personality has always been in everything. And so now it's not, you know, wanting to earn a certain, you know, amount every year and, you know, get gallery representation and get into certain juried shows. Now it's like, mm-hmm. okay, I want to get into a museum. So I want to, then you want to get into a better museum, and then you want to get into an art fair. And then, so it just, you know, and unfortunately that's just how my mind is. And again, it's helpful to have people around you just sort of tell you to take a breath and look at the work and just be so happy with the work and kind of with everything, you know, I've done so far. But honestly,
mm-hmm.
yes, I would have thought I was the most successful artist in the history of the world 4 years ago if this is where I was. And now I'm just like, oh, God, there's just so many more things that I want to accomplish.
Sure.
But isn't that great? It's like the world keeps expanding the more you kind of find your place in it, the right place in it.
It's,
you know,
it is great, but it's also sometimes exhausting to not have the kind of brain that just allows you to just breathe for a moment and take a week off and,
sure.
you know, just kind of breathe in everything that I've done so far. The only time I have those moments is when it's just me in my studio and I look around at my work. And I'm
mm-hmm.
just like, oh, my God, these did not exist until I came in here and created them, which is just an unbelievable feeling to have. But it's just that raw feeling. Besides that, the rest of my day when I'm sort of bouncing around, it's just a feeling of needing to get this or that and expand and get more followers. And, you know, it's just ever – it's just
sure.
never ceasing. And I think – that's the piece of the studio is when you're just in there, it's just about you and the work and you can be happy.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. All right. So here's a question for you. Obviously now I have this image of you walking in, and let me tell you, in my head, I've just like imagined the most gorgeous studio filled with paintings. But when you're not looking
Never
at your
me.
Own work. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that someday. But, when you're not looking at your own work, whose work do you admire? Who's out there today that you like to look at? Or even
so
you know,
always,
someone in a museum?
I always hesitate
yeah.
with this answer for two reasons. One is it's
mm-hmm.
fairly generic. And two, a lot of the artists who inspire me are men because that's just how it's been for years. And I hate that. I want to change that dynamic. So I
yep.
will say the sort of my quote-unquote generic answer, which is also completely and totally authentic, is Monet and Van Gogh. And
mm-hmm.
if you
okay.
see my work at all in terms of color, and if you see, I like to abstract water lilies a lot, and sort of the way I use color and texture is you can see those two in my work
mm-hmm.
a lot. But recently, as I've kind of embraced my identity as an artist, there have been certain artists that I think are fabulous, and I really tried to focus on female artists. So there's a
yeah.
Brazilian whose name I'm sure I butcher, whose name is Beatriz Milhazes.
Yep.
I think, but she does like incredibly colorful work. She's very famous. And I just love her use of color, which is something I'm drawn to. Wolf Kahn is an artist who's still living. He splits his time in New York and Brattleboro, Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing color work. I love Kusama, who doesn't, even though she's completely wild. I think Jenny Holzer is great, who does, you
mm-hmm.
know, these, like, texts. So I've been, you know, there's a lot of people who I think are fabulous, but if you want to basically know the visual artists who, like, blow me away. It's Van Gogh and Monet.
Of course.
Yeah. Isn't that fun? Yeah. Well, you know, everybody's madly scribbling down the other names you said so they can go check them out, which is exactly what we want to have happen. Because, you know, let's get out there and see some new stuff. It's good for us all. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So now that we know
kind
of about you and your art career, Julie, we have to get to the meat of this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the first question I have for you is, how did you get started on social media?
So I think, I mean, someone just, I think actually, you know what it was? I think when my painting was going to be on the Mindy Project, and Mindy, full disclaimer, Mindy and I are very good friends, and she was also very, like, early, strong supporter of me, and she loved my work, which was also a big confidence boost. But she and I have known each other since seventh grade. And so, you know, she's a famous actress, and she was going to, I think, tweet out an image of my painting on her show. And she was like, "You're on Twitter, right?" And I was like, "No, 2015. And I started, because of that, I started thinking about social media. And as a visual artist, you're like, oh, my God, Instagram was made for me. So I did join Twitter, although I don't think I can log in anymore because I don't know my password. It's that sort of thing, right? But Instagram immediately just kind of took hold of me because of the kind of medium it was. But I think she was the one who first was like, I'm going to tweet. And so I became aware of the idea of social media.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Do you get onto Facebook at all, or do you just do Instagram? And is there any other sort of the new ones that you're looking at?
Yeah, there's, oh, God, what's the new one? It begins with a V.
I know.
Vero.
I was on it for a hot second, but again, I lost my password.
Yeah, me too.
So.
Hot second.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, there's only so much time in the day.
So I find Facebook, I don't think I've made a ton of sales to people that I don't know at all through Facebook, but Facebook is a great way for, you know, the younger brother of someone who went to law school with me might see me post something and it shows up on the feed. And so I've had pretty robust sales through, you know, 3 degrees of separation of someone who is friends with me on Facebook. And that is just incredibly fortunate. My networks of Yale and Stanford Law, these are highly educated people who can afford my work. And I get that. That's just like one of the many ways that I've been incredibly lucky on my path. But really, that's the way. It's not like through some sort of like Facebook business. So I would say, I mean, it's mostly Instagram, but Facebook has been useful. Also, in just letting my mom's friends know I'm no longer a lawyer. You know, like that's
right. Yeah, that's important.
I think you just summed it up for me.
I'm like,
kidding.
Still single? Like, should we set her up with? It's like, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Really,
okay,
away.
So you've mentioned that Instagram, you know, is one of your major tools for marketing your art. And we spent a lot of time on this show talking about finding your audience on Instagram. How did you find your audience?
Because
it's hard to go from zero to. I know, but it's hard to go from zero to 58,000 followers. I mean, obviously. How
it is.
What were some of the
mates.
Like, what did you do along the way to get there? I'm really curious if it's similar to what I did. I'm really curious.
I'm curious to know if you had like a clear path along. It wasn't just like, it wasn't like completely well thought out. I think the main thing I did was, first of all, I established a clear art account. I have a private personal account where I have pictures of me with my friends or pictures of like my niece or whatever. A photograph I think is cool. And so often I see artists making the mistake of posting beautiful work and the next picture is like, can you believe I've been with my husband for 7 years? And people don't care about you and your husband. They care about the work.
Yeah, it's sad.
And so you've got to separate it.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I recognized that early on, and you'll see from my first post on, there's not a single post ever that does not have a painting in it. Sometimes I'm in it. Often my dog is in it because she's the real celebrity. But never once is there anything that doesn't have to do with the art. And then the second thing is I hate to say it, but I pay attention to what my followers like. My favorite work is not what my followers like. My favorite work is large, semi-abstract paintings. I think it's the work that is like most unique to me. I think it's what's going to get me to the next level. But if you want to know what my followers like, it's a small watercolor that's more representational. So I have to mix them in. I have to mix in the post that gets 4,000 likes with the post that gets 2,000 likes, because I want my best work there, but I also want to build a following. And I think it's naive for artists to think that, like, the work will show through. Like, I don't care what my followers think, as long as whatever. I do call that posts do well, because that's what increases your following. So I would monitor, and there's probably 10 paintings in my studio now that I love that are not on Instagram and are not on my website, and people will see them in person and be like, oh my God, that's so different for you. Well, not really, but it's not on my Instagram account.
Boy, I think there's a big lesson there, because, you know, I always say people should never post bad work, because sometimes they're so committed to posting that they put up something and you think, oh, I don't like, I mean, that's not what I'm expecting to see from him or her. And so it's kind of like, it's also a good lesson to sort of curate what you post. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. It should be what your followers are reacting to. And I get the idea of putting in the ones you want them to see as well. I think there's a big lesson there.
There is, but I guess, so I did so many different things, and I did some things with other people, like share groups and ways to build my account.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't, I mean, were you doing things that you were getting thousands of followers at a time, or was it just like ones and
no, I sort of love this. My growth is so crazy consistent. It's like 600 followers a week, or, you know, sometimes I'll get a bump. I think one thing artists should really consider is there's like some art sites that will repost your work, and sometimes there's a fee, but they're super curated. It's like they reject probably 97% and some people will be like, oh God, you're gonna pay $20 to have when I had 1,000 followers, I would happily pay $20 for my art to be featured on a site that was heavily curated. I appreciated all the other artists, and there were a million people following my account.
Sure.
I would absolutely do that. It's very different from like there's overlap with advertising, but it's comes across in people's feeds, and they're like, oh my God, this artist seems cool. So I did that a lot, like I would say when I had under 10,000 followers. But like things just keep, Leslie, I'm sure you find this, but like the bigger your account gets, like then people tag me all the time, and it will get on social media in ways
that do you use hashtags, I'm assuming, so hoping that people pick them up, because whenever Better Homes and Gardens shares my account, I'll get like 1,000 or 2,000 followers from that. So
yeah.
It's great when other people do that. And that's been by far the big growth periods that I've had. I mentioned a couple weeks ago on the show that I did a Insta takeover for Country Home Magazine. And I got like 6 or 7,000 followers from doing that, because it was an entire weekend where I took over their account.
Oh my God. In like 2 days, you got 6 or 7,000 followers.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Oh my
God.
So I've never. So that's
it was like
really
unbelievable.
Week.
And it, I mean, I've only been on Insta. I've only had this account like 14 months. So, every single person I've gotten has been 100% organic. I mean, I would never ever do anything to like buy followers or anything, because that will come back and
it's
kick
you
in.
It's crazy why people buy followers. It just when people have asked
me
about
that,
it's
so dumb,
like,
because
you don't understand, if you have fake followers, there's no engagement, and no one who actually follows your account will see
it. It totally would backfire
because the algorithm checks that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and there's an account called For FOHR where they are a company that puts brands together with they call them influencers, but Instagrammers I like better. I think influencers sounds really obnoxious. Anyway, they can do a check on your account and give you a rating based on whether or not you have if there's bots, you know, fake followers, whatever, and what your engagement is. And I got like a 98.9% or something. I mean, it was really great because it's like we work so hard. But occasionally I have done things.
Is that
things,
a
like
free service? I want to do that.
Yeah, yeah. FOHR.
All right. Well, I'll do a one-on-one.
There you go.
After and get their info.
But what was super cool about the takeover is it just gave me a chance to be on their Instagram for 3 days doing stories and all my photos, you know, 4 times a day. And it was just like their entire audience saw me for 72 hours and the visibility was incredible. So
you must have
been so spent
at the end because I know you put heart and soul into these things.
Oh, my gosh.
You must have been just wiped.
I was. I was.
That is such a great point, by the way, the heart and soul. I think that is, I mean, you might disagree, Leslie, but the biggest misconception people might have about Instagram is like, I worked so incredibly hard for 2 years to get it to a place where I could only check in with it. I check in probably half an hour a day now, 45
mm-hmm.
minutes.
Yeah.
I used to be on it 2 hours a day because that's what I needed to do to. And people will be like, oh, I don't ever want to do that. Well, if you want to start really selling paintings, that's the sort of thing you may have to do. So
yeah, I
did.
I started commenting on every comment, and I still do it for 24
exactly.
hours on a post, and it's insane. Okay, so how many times do you post on your Instagram?
I post on average 2 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You
if a post is doing
again.
Really well, I will maybe post once. And if 2 posts are not doing great, I'll maybe post 3 times.
Right.
But that's the average.
And how do you
that's
decide
impressive.
if they do great? This is going to be really interesting. I'm curious.
I mean, it's a combination of likes and comments. And if it's like, you know, usually everything matches up. So if it's like if someone reposts it on their account, that will almost automatically match up with a ton of likes and ton of comments.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
you know, it's rare that there's a ton of comments and few likes and the reverse, you know, a ton
right.
of likes.
Yeah,
and,
right.
So that's basically how I do it. And I can tell, honestly, like I can tell if a post is going to do well in the first like half an hour.
Ditto.
Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you, when you say, what kind of people repost your posts? Just out of curiosity. Is it
everything? Like,
is it?
Yeah, so
individuals.
Sites, but honestly, just a lot of individuals, and it's like their personal account. It's not private, and they're like, "Oh my god, I love this artist," and it's like, you know, they've got 300 followers, or it's an art account, which is great, or like I was in a luxury handbags story yesterday. Halm, H-A-L-M. I had to look them up. They're great handbags. But I was like in their story because they loved a painting. So like, you know, whatever that is.
You know,
who
what?
Cares?
It's really...
They probably have money.
That's right.
Say,
but...
And right, I was
I
like,
have
well,
to say
this is good branding.
It's really interesting because it's almost as if. Oh, shoot. I just have to decline a call from down under. But what's interesting to me is that when it gets rolling, you know, and then there's this kind of, it's almost like there's this contagious enthusiasm that you see. And it's really interesting. We all have to remember, too, that these other accounts, like maybe your handbag account, everyone's looking for content. And if they can talk about your great painting, all the better. It's just like when, you know, we're all posting something, you're trying to be relevant, you're trying to be interesting. I mean, this is true of anyone who's in communications, PR, whatever. They all need content. So I think the better job you do of posting, the better the chances are of it being of value to someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I will say that there's not a week that goes by that I'm not like actively thinking about increasing my following and engagement. Like I do spend less time, but it's not, I think when I reached about 40,000 followers, it just, for whatever reason, for about a month, it was very slow growth and I started to get nervous and then it was fine, but it's not like it just disappears from my mind. Just because it's so completely and totally linked to how I sell my work.
Oh, I love it. I just love that your efforts are so consistent and that it proves the value of it. So I know from talking to you that you've sold paintings to collectors who have found it through social media, through Instagram. But do you ever get the buyer who says, well, I love it, but I really need to see it in person before I make this purchase? Or I guess what I'm trying to figure out is there sort of a typical Instagram buyer? Like, how do you handle that particular end of the transaction?
Hard no on a typical Instagram buyer. I mean, the last week
hard no.
I had a therapist in London, like a school teacher in Arizona, and then a guy who lives in Buenos Aires who may buy a small painting, who it's unclear what he does, but it sounded kind of shady, but that's fine. I have, for my larger works, they're quite expensive. And, you know, I would say that group of very wealthy buyers, they are kind of similar. But what I love is that for my smaller works, I do payment plans. And for my smaller works, I just, you know, I have right now a woman who is paying off a painting in 9 months. She lives in Cambridge, so that it was kind of easier because I met her. And she is working for an amazing nonprofit. And she really is, you know, she is finding a way to make it work. So I don't really have a typical buyer. I really try to make it as possible for people to try to own original art because I do a big business, but it's just not the same as the original.
Absolutely.
And then there's like extremely snooty, very wealthy people who are on the other end of that.
That's cool. And do they ever ask if they can try the painting out and if they don't like it, send it back?
Yeah, actually that has happened many times. And one time a client sent it back because he wanted it to be greener. And he sent it back, paid for all the shipping, and then paid for my time, which turned out to be a $500 an hour thing. So that's a pretty good rate.
That's
not
awesome.
And
good for you.
Loved
talking.
It.
Oh,
so
that's great.
I did that once. I will say, like, I don't generally like to do that. I send videos. And if people are just really uncomfortable, then I'm like, well, try to visit the studio. But if not, I get it. But generally, just because, you know, it ends up being out of my studio for about a month, and there's always potential buyers coming in, so there is a cost to me if they decide they don't want to purchase it or they want to change it. So generally I don't do that, but I, you know, you would be completely shocked by the amount of people who don't even want to see a JPEG of a painting that are comfortable with just seeing it on Instagram, on their phone.
I've heard that
and
from galleries,
you know, $10,000 to you for a painting. And I am shocked because that's not how I would purchase, but I also, $10,000 is a lot of money to me.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So what do you think is the most important thing you do on Instagram that helps sell your art?
Oh, gosh. Well, honestly, like the initial gut reaction, which is, comes across as arrogant, and I hope it doesn't. It's just I think that my work is good, right? Like there's a lot of accounts out there that have really horrible art. So that's part of it. It's just hopefully that the product itself is a high-quality product. I think that I'm always trying to find, like, different ways of engaging different kinds of audiences. My golden retriever has this hilarious habit of looking at my art. And she kind of like pauses in front of my eyes for like a minute or 30 seconds. And it's hilarious. Like, I'm laughing while I'm filming her. So that, you know, I've incorporated that into feed. And that's brought in a kind of different kind of audience. I do process videos where I paint really quickly and it's sped up. So I'll do like a 30-minute watercolor that's like a 20-second time lapse and people see that.
That's great.
So I think that's the other thing. Like, I've seen some fabulous artists, really cool accounts, but they don't have any videos or they don't do an Instagram story or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think mixing it up for your audience is key to continue growing it. I don't know, maybe part of it's my tone of voice, like when I'm writing about my work. I try to really like engage with my audience, respond to comments, respond to direct messages. I'm trying not to like distance myself too much. But it's hard. It's hard as you grow a following to find the time to do that. But I actually hired an assistant. I hired an assistant because things were getting too crazy, and she does my Instagram stories. And she said, "Do you want me to start responding to direct messages or to like comments?" And I just didn't want to give that up because I really like communicating directly with people. So
yeah, that would be hard.
That's really nice. Yeah.
So how do your galleries that you work with deal with your Instagram success?
Yeah.
Do they like it? Do they not?
I think we know.
Yeah, I mean, I think Abigail Ogilvie, Abigail the head, she's fabulous. And, you know, I think it was kind of an adjustment for both of us because she doesn't have any other artists in her gallery that have remotely the kind of Instagram following I have. And so just the consistency of sales that was occurring that she was not involved in, it's just extremely rare. Like many of her artists, 100% of their sales go through Abigail.
Right.
And so I think, you know, it was just a learning curve for both of us. But, you know, she's very, I think generally she's just very supportive, and she continues to bring in clients who are interested in my work. And I think they're impressed by my Instagram following, so that just like some of my Instagram followers are probably impressed that several galleries, you know, I have a relationship with. So I think right now it's a very symbiotic relationship, but you know, hopefully that will continue.
Yeah.
That's
good
great.
For you.
Really? You can hang on to that. I mean, it's such a changing world. I do feel bad for gallery owners who are trying to scramble to keep up with it. But, you know, the important
100%.
Thing is that, yeah, it's a hard thing.
She has all of these crazy, like, overhead operating costs. And, you know, increasingly the big galleries, not just, you know, in New York and London, but just the big galleries in each metropolitan city start kind of boxing out other galleries. So, and it's such an important thing that they're doing. So, I mean, I agree. It's a difficult market if you're
tough.
Yeah.
If they're trying to, especially if they're not willing to change, I think that's the secret. But, well, all right. Tell us something that you haven't done yet that you're thinking about, whether that's like a new medium or a new expression, or even if there's somewhere that you sort of have a hankering to travel to. Is there something that you kind of have on your to-do list? I can't imagine it leaving your studio and your Instagram account, but you tell me.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's sort of sad that you say that because I do think about, like, well, how, like, I haven't missed a day of posting in a year, you know, even on Christmas, so.
Right.
Leslie, sound familiar?
Yeah.
The day I had surgery,
I was in Japan
for
like 2.5 weeks with my friends, and it was always like, I've got to find a Wi-Fi, and they're like, I have to post, and I'm like, yes. So, no, but I think for me, there are so many amazing natural landscapes in the world, New Zealand, parts of China, Asia in particular, where I have very little experience. I've only been to Japan. being outdoors outside of cities and kind of just being one, kind of just walking in the woods, so to speak, that's mm-hmm. my favorite thing to do, and I would love to do it in many different, because I don't paint from pictures, and I don't paint from like plein air. I'm not looking at something while I'm painting. I paint from my head, mm-hmm. and I think because of that, I would love to actually viscerally experience certain landscapes all throughout the world. Iceland, whatever it is, some kind of combination of cliffs and water and trees, and then get back to my studio and paint those memories.
I feel like you need to go to New Zealand, looking at your paintings. I'm like, ooh, New Zealand may be calling you.
New Zealand was absolutely. And my cousins are from New Zealand, so I could actually stay someplace. But
you got to go. Yeah.
Yeah, you
add
should.
It to the list.
That would be
the long
magical.
List.
Yeah.
So for the listeners listening to this show who maybe have, you know, 400 or 500, if that, followers on Instagram, and they really want to promote their art, what advice would you give them, kind of like a plan on how to build their following? I mean, they're not going to get to 58,000 followers right away, and that's a crazy goal to even have. But how would you kind of break it down, either whether it's on a daily basis or weekly basis or monthly basis, just to keep working in the direction of growing your audience?
Sure. So what I did for the first year was I liked and commented on many other artists' posts. So I myself was actively engaging with many other accounts. And once they see that, they would start following me and I follow them. So that was a big part of it, of just like, if you really want to grow your following, commit an hour a day to it. And I absolutely think it's worth it. But that's what it takes. It doesn't, you know, unless you're wealthy enough to hire someone who can do this for you, that's what it takes. So commenting on and liking other art accounts, I think is a really great way to, you know, I would just go to the hashtag of oil painting, scroll through, and I would like every single one that I liked. And if I really liked it, then I would go and comment on it. And I somehow think that the algorithm itself noticed back then, and maybe still does, if you yourself are engaging as an account. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The second thing is, research has shown, so I started my account around the same time as another friend who's a plastic surgeon, and she has 3 times as many followers as I do. And she has these like small clips of like a lot of plastic surgery stuff, and she's extremely talented. But one of the major differences between us, besides of course content, is that she posts probably 5 times a day. So the other thing is, I don't like doing this because I think it's annoying, but if you want to grow a following, the more you post, the more followers you have. That's just like, there's a direct correlation there. So in the beginning,
every time,
maybe post.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say
in the
like,
beginning,
like
what
3 times a day in the beginning.
Yeah. Because I have to tell you, every time I lose a follower, you know how you watch your numbers go up and then suddenly it goes down a little? I always think, oh, I posted too much and I've annoyed them.
Okay.
Well, that will happen. That will happen for a few, but what's happening is every time you post, if you're using hashtags correctly, you're giving the Instagram algorithm an opportunity to say, if you like this, you might like this. And then your painting gets in that.
That's a good.
Do you change
good
your hashtags all the time?
Oh, God, you know, Leslie, I'm gonna obviously talk to you about how to grow my following more. I have like, you know, 15 hashtags that I use. But
I don't change mine,
you know,
very
I
often.
Actually, you don't. Okay.
No, I don't.
The one thing I thought I should do is try to get more into like the interior design world, which is fabulous and you are very much a part of on Instagram, because so far I've been sort of dealing with artists and art accounts, but of course art is a huge part of interior design.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe exploring a hashtag situation with that, but generally it's like contemporary art, oil painting, contemporary painting, landscape painting. I mean,
right.
It's like pretty intuitive hashtags.
I really do think you two are going to have a lot to talk about. Yeah, no, I really do think that hashtags are huge. I mean, like bigger than I think anybody understands how much they can help your account grow. And I've said on the show before, find the artists that you really like and look at their hashtags. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And look at who they follow. Look at who follows them.
Who's listening to this to look at all my hashtags. I mean, I easily do 15 hashtags per post.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's impressive. Wow.
And it annoys me every time.
Oh,
I wish I had a
cut
and paste for that.
Oh, you can't.
No,
I'm sure you can.
No, I don't.
You don't use text replacement? Oh, my gosh. You don't use text replacement on your iPhone?
Text replacement.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. No,
you have to do that.
You guys are probably about to change my world.
I am about to change
your
world.
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, you have to go on your phone. And I'm telling everyone this,
not
just you. No,
we're
going to
do this after. We're going to do this after.
Oh, no, we should.
No, I have to tell everyone else because this is huge. You can set up your phone that if you start typing a particular word, it'll automatically enter whatever you want it to enter. So if I go to my phone and I type in hashtag farmhouse, 25 hashtags appear. I just click on it and they all come up.
Oh, my God.
May I just say, Julia, you are welcome.
Oh my God! This is a game changer.
Okay, so go to. I'm just going to tell you how to get there, and then you can figure it out.
Yeah.
You can also Google it or find a video. I'm sure. Click on general. Go to settings on your phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Click on general.
Yep.
Yep.
Then click on keyboard, and then click on text replacement.
Now, son of a gun. There it is.
Do not put a common word. Because when you type it, when you're typing something, all of a sudden all the hashtags will come in. I always do hashtag something. So hashtag art or hashtag whatever. And that way it's not likely that you're going to just mistakenly type it and have all these populate whatever you're typing in the middle of. It'll change your world.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Leslie, good job.
I've mentioned it before on the show, but this just seems like the perfect time. And it is I can't even tell you. I haven't typed a hashtag in like 2 years.
Oh, that is great.
Even this
that
morning, I was like, there must be a better way. There must.
Yeah,
and
there is. There is. Now you know.
And now all of our 45,000 people just heard it. This is terrific.
Exactly. No, it'll say. I have that for my email. I did have it for my email address. I have it for my mailing address. Anything I type more than, five times a day, I did text replacement. So you can do more
great.
Than one.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Now I've got to get you away from your iPhone for a second, because. I think this may be our last question. Let's see. But can you describe for us what a typical day is like? Or maybe I should say like an ideal day if you had your way. I'm thinking there's a lot of painting going on. There's a lot of social networking, social media going on. And I'm kind of curious how you divide all of that up.
Wait, so did you say a typical day or an ideal day? Because they're
well,
very different.
I know. That's why I'm thinking, all right, tell us typical.
Okay, a typical day is I wake up quite early and I play tennis because I need to move my body or I will go insane.
Yep.
And then I'm back home, by 9 or something. And then I am in the studio, let's see, probably from 9 to 9:30 I figure out what I'm going to post and post it. I don't plan like the day before or anything like that. I just that morning I'm like, okay, what can I post? And I figure out if it's I actually look at my account and make sure that it's kind of blended nicely, so it's not 3 birch tree posts in a row or 3 abstracts in a row. That it's kind of if I haven't posted a video in a while, so. And then from probably like 9:30 to 1:30, I'm in the studio. Painting like crazy. at which point I'm like, oh my God, I've only had coffee. I need to eat something. This is crazy.
Yep.
Then I eat like far too much and feel sick. And then it's like 2 p.m. And then usually from like 2 to 5, I'm dealing with a bunch of stuff. If it's in a day that my assistant is here, it's, you can't imagine like the logistics of shipping paintings, figuring out framing, because I do a lot of framework for clients. There's usually once a week, there's some kind of something like this podcast or an interview or, you know, going someplace to lecture or something. So something like that, that I'm kind of coordinating. Mm-hmm. Then dealing with, you know, potential clients who, then I probably go on Instagram then for the first time and comment and potentially post again or don't. So all of that happens in that like 3-hour window. And then probably 4 nights a week or 5 nights a week, I'm doing something out because I'm a very social person and it's hard. I'm kind of alone in this studio and in this world, which is not social at all.
Yep.
And it's just, it's important for me to engage with the world and people, not just for my sanity, but I think it makes for better art. So some kind of either just hanging out with a friend or some sort of larger social event takes up the evening. And then when I get home, I'm either back in the studio for another hour, you know, from like 9 to 10, or I'm again on my computer, you know, doing a price sheet or whatever it is that administratively matters. And then I like to read for at least an hour a night, a novel.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds
good
like a nice one.
Yeah.
You know, the thing,
so, I mean,
the thing
I'm that's sort of an idealized version of a typical day. Sometimes like I'm on the phone with my insurance company for 2 hours, you know,
sure,
like escalating things with like a poor man who's like, this is not my problem, and I'm like swearing at him. So it, right, like it depends. What, but generally sort of an idealized day is fairly common too. So that's lucky.
Yeah, yeah. You know, once again, I can't tell you how many artists tell us they start their day with some form of exercise. It's really, really a good lesson for everyone. Yeah.
It is. So one last question for you. What's next?
Well,
do you have a blog?
I don't have a blog. I mean, I don't have a public blog. I feel like I'm blogging to my friends constantly in an informal fashion. I've got like a lot of little projects. So I'm writing a play. I'm writing a children's book. I'm still trying to paint at least 30 hours a week of actual painting time. And so right now, let's see, I've got like 4 galas coming up where my paintings are going to be up for auction. And these are great because like the artist gets like 25% of the proceeds, and the rest goes to an amazing cause. And so like, I just feel like everyone kind of wins. So I'll be doing a lot of that. And then, you know, strategizing for the next couple of years, as I said in the beginning, my next goal is to start really opening lines of communication with curators at smaller museums and trying to figure out, like, at what point, you know, could there be, like, an acquisition or sort of what is that process or how to, since I'm not, I didn't get an MFA or a BFA and, you know, sort of just how to begin that conversation, because that's sort of where I'd like to be in the next couple of years. And I will say for anyone listening that right now as an artist, the least important thing to me, and the, not important, I would say the thing that is lowest on the list of priorities is sales because that is such a like a consistently good part of my business. I mean, ask me in 6 months if I haven't sold anything. But so many artists I talk to, you know, making money is a huge part of it. And I'm so fortunate that right now I can support myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's so
wonderful.
Good. That's great to hear. Yeah. Very inspiring. Very inspiring.
Absolutely. Wow. Good for you.
Another underachiever.
Yeah. We love underachievers.
We do.
Oh, well, don't
oh,
worry.
No,
I have my
great.
Dark days of despair.
Oh, we all
That's
do.
Every
we all
creative
do.
Does.
Yes. Well, this is
well,
wonderful.
Good for you. Yeah. Thanks so much for being on
we
the show.
Should, we should tell
thank
everyone
you guys
again.
So much for having me.
Julia
oh, no,
Powell,
thank you.
P-O-W-E-L-L. And,
yeah, Julia
yeah,
S.
We'll,
Powell.
Julia S. Powell. So look her up
and
you can
I
see
do
her stuff on
say,
Instagram.
Julia and Margaret, we have to make sure we're all following each other, obviously. We have to do that.
Oh, sure.
And
sure.
Then I just think that this has just been really cool. Instagram's pretty friggin' amazing. That's all I can say. It's been a wild ride.
Really, I'm going to redesign my day.
At another point, we can just talk about the incredible disruption of the art market that is Instagram and how fabulously democratizing it is.
Yeah,
because
music
just,
to my ears.
I mean, I think in the future there will be dissertations written about it and its impact on the art world. I really do. If not,
yeah.
they're not already being written.
Go get another degree. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
all right,
thanks
guys.
To you
thanks
both.
Again. Okay.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.